Please turn to Revelation chapter 17. We began this study of the Antichrist in Daniel. Then we went to the second chapter of Paul's epistle to the Thessalonians. Then it was John's first and third epistles. We also spent time in 1 Timothy chapter 4. And for a number of weeks, we've been in the book of Revelation, looking first at chapter 11, then 12, then 13, and now 17. In this study, we brought in, of course, many other scriptures as well. And especially early on, we used many, many quotes from papal pronouncements and decrees and bulls and other Romish documents. And we have woven in a good deal of history, although where would we end? We could do so much more in that regard. But over the years, we've studied the history of the Pope's persecutions of our brothers and sisters in Christ. Now, I'm not saying, well, then we don't have to study anymore. It's important that we continue to study and review that history as well as the whole history of the true Church of Christ and teach it to our children. This for the glory of God, the good of His church, including our own souls. Now, we've reviewed the birth and the development of the papacy as we've studied the Word of God, or at least main portions of it which deal with the Antichrist, in that we followed the development of the Romish beast, first as the fourth kingdom in Daniel's prophecy. I've used the term imperial beast to differentiate from what the beast became, which was the papal beast. As we saw a number of weeks ago, Rome, prior to the fall of the last emperor, the Romish beast even had seven successive forms of government. And I use imperial in a general sense, although imperial especially certainly describes the Roman emperors and empire, heathen and so-called Christian. Now, in Revelation, we've seen the Romish beast as the papal beast, wielding both the civil and the religious, ecclesiastical sword. We've seen this beast set forth in various fashions to help us understand the Antichrist more and more, and certainly it was to help our brethren who eventually were so fiercely persecuted by the papal beast. Now, in Revelation chapter 13, we saw the Romish beast as two beasts, representing again the civil power and the ecclesiastical power of the papacy. Now, here in Revelation chapter 17, and we've already done the first part of it and looked at the first beast, but we see in John's vision the papacy set forth in a different fashion, but still using the beast as a figure of papal civil power exercised directly at times, but mostly through emperors and kings and princes and presidents and so forth. The Roman Catholic Church is represented as a woman riding the beast. That's significant. Riding the beast, that is, using and controlling the beast. Well, we say the Roman Catholic Church, but of course the Roman Catholic Church is a sacerdotal system, and it would be nothing without her horde of sacrificing mediatorial priests. But we have to go a step further. The priests only function as an extension of the Pope and are under his totalitarian power and pleasure. The Pope, what I'm saying is the Pope is the Roman Catholic Church. Everything begins and ends with him. To the Roman Catholic people, he is Christ on earth, or he claims to be Christ on earth with the keys of heaven and hell. He is the author and finisher of the Roman Catholic salvation. There is no salvation without the Pope, and it is no salvation anyway. It's damnation. The Pope is the sun around which the whole church revolves. He's the arbitrator of all truth. He's the source of all law. For the Roman Catholic person, all religious and spiritual roads lead to Rome, to the Vatican City, And the Pope is the head and heart of Rome. He's the Holy Father, so-called. Now, John's revelation sets forth the true Church of Christ as a city, in fact, called Jerusalem in Revelation, and, of course, as a faithful bride. At the same time, over against that, we see the Antichrist. I should say we see the anti-church of Antichrist set forth as a city also called Babylon and as a even the great whore. Now, we should keep in mind that this prophecy was given to John near the end of the first century. This was the Lord's mercy to his people so that as the papacy developed, and after it had developed, they might understand that the popes are the Antichrist. And also, they see the ruin of Antichrist in this book. And so that's for their edification, encouragement, and comfort. Here in this chapter 17 is a graphic description of popery in full flight, a great harlot religion with the pope exercising religious spiritual power directly, ecclesiastical power, and civil power by and through civil rulers. We set against this harlot, the Church of Christ, her ministers and her people, her worship and her ordinances. The Church of Christ, which is the virgin bride of Christ, and he, her head. Today we're going to consider verses 1 through 6. I am, all things considered, going to move quite quickly through this chapter. Compared to other prophecy concerning Antichrist, which we've been dealing with, this is, I would say, relatively easy to discern because it's such a graphic description of the papal system and church, which we've seen with our own eyes. Verses 1 and 2, and there came one of the seven angels, I'm in chapter 17, which had the seven vials and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore. The papal church is called the great whore, not even a great whore, but the great whore. A great whore. A fallen away church. A church unfaithful to her head and husband. This church, if you remember, and this system rose up out of the true church. It was a great apostasy. Now, Paul spoke of that in 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 3, for instance. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come, except there come a falling away first, falling away, apostasy, a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. So the papal church, headed by Antichrist, is the great whore church, which apostatized from Christ. This is the anti-church put in place of the true church, the anti-church led by the Antichrist, supplanting Christ and usurping his titles, offices, and authority. So the papal system is compared to a great whore, a woman unfaithful to her husband. Now, there is no religious ecclesiastical system on earth since Christ walked this earth, since Christ brought in the New Testament. There is no church or system which comes close to contesting with the papacy and the papal church for this title, the great whore. The great whore that sitteth on many waters, that's interpreted in verse 15. And he said unto me, the waters which thou sawest, where the whore sitteth, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. So that's interpreted right there. The Roman Catholic Church, of course, is worldwide, and even today, I believe, has 1 billion members, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication. You note it says have. Sounds like it's past tense. Well, this is a vision. The angel said to John, come hither, and I will show thee. What John is viewing is far in the future, but he's viewing it as if it were present and happening, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication. Simply put, this speaks of a great host of civil rulers who were used by the Pope and are being used by the Pope for his purposes, for his glory, for his advancement, and who also used and use the popes for their own gain, including in the past to keep their people under their heel. The rulers of the past were controlled by fear of papal bans and bulls, by fear of excommunication and so condemnation to hell. The rulers who joined the whore in her idolatrous worship and served the Pope were in turn benefited by the Pope commanding all people to be obedient to such emperors, kings, and princes who were the Pope's true sons. There's a mutuality here, a using for their own purposes, to satisfy their own lusts, you might say. Now, we spoke of this last week, this that the popes would command the people to obey faithful Roman Catholic rulers. Spoke of that when we were in chapter 13. Now this, which we just summed up, is called fornication because it's an immoral, improper, perverse relationship between the great spiritual whore and the kings of the earth. And I should also insert here that the Roman Catholic Church is a church state, with the Pope as the totalitarian ruler of Vatican City, as well as the head of what he says is the one true church. Well, that's spiritual whoredom, to mix those two offices like that. And the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. This speaks of the great multitude, certainly between those 42 months, or I should say during those 42 months we've spoken of, and certainly since, who drank and have drunk and do drink deeply of the intoxicating superstition and idolatry of popery. They're spiritually drunk. Talk to a faithful Roman Catholic, and it's like speaking to a spiritually drunk man or woman. They cannot even rightly reason, and of course, have no spiritual discernment whatsoever. They're overawed by the lavish pomp and ceremony and the claimed authority and power of the papacy. And so they accept all these popish doctrines and dogmas, which openly and directly contradict the scriptures, and they accept many of these, all of these rituals of the Roman Catholic Church, which are obviously outlandish superstitions. They practice those ungodly religious rituals, and they hold to those things which are destructive to their own souls and assault the honor and glory of the Lord, even as they insist they're doing this for the glory of the Lord. So they act like drunk men and women, and in truth, they're spiritually drunk on the wine of popery, which is the wine of spiritual whoredom, blasphemy, and idolatry. Look at that church. Look at all her abominations, even, both spiritual and carnal, if you will. And yet they stay with that church. They continue to say, this is the only true church. And that Pope, he is the infallible vicar of Christ, the head of the church. I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore, the final destruction of the papacy and the papal church begins to be revealed toward the end of this chapter and then into succeeding chapters. Verse 3, so he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and 10 horns. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. In his vision, John's carried into the wilderness. It's not certain why. Possibly because the true church would be driven into the wilderness by the great papal whore, as we read about in chapter 12, of course, doing the devil's business. That is, the true church would be driven into the wilderness, surrounded, of course, even in a wilderness of persecution, hunted by popish persecutors who were more like wild, bloodthirsty, ravenous beasts than men. In actual fact, in many cases, Christians would literally flee into the wilderness to hide and survive as well. I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet beast full of names of blasphemy, having 7 heads and 10 horns. This is again the Romish papal beast we've been considering from the scriptures these many weeks. The woman is the religious, ecclesiastical aspect of this duel. The fact that the great whore sits on the beast indicates that she directs the civil powers to accomplish her ends. And they are crucial for her if she is to put all people under her totalitarian sway. Now, in the past, papal bans and excommunication was the bit in the mouth of the beast. And I don't doubt that Roman Catholic government officials today, certainly in some countries, are to some extent still controlled by the Pope the same way. I'm sure they are. The beast is scarlet. Scarlet, in this case, may stand for the extreme wickedness of the papal system, the whole papal system. The prophet Isaiah speaks of sins being as scarlet. The scarlet could also, in this case, stand for brazen whoredom. The beast is, it says, full of the names of blasphemy. In chapter 13, we saw the papal beast had blasphemy written right across its forehead, as it were. The papacy is proud of its blasphemy, which it says is holiness. This is the name, this is the identification of the papal beast. In one sense, blasphemy is the name of popery. We've already addressed in detail through these messages the blasphemy of popery. The Pope blasphemes constantly, doesn't he? By his words, by his claims, by his actions, certainly by the names that he insists on, his titles. The civil rulers that would own him to be the infallible vicar of Christ, the only head of the church, the Holy Father, the ruler of all men, Dominus Apostolicus, divine Lord and Apostle, they were and are great blasphemers. As we spoke of in an earlier message, many have literally kissed the Pope, kissed his ring, kissed his feet, rather than the Son. To the kings of the earth, the Lord says, kiss the Son, Psalm 2, verse 12, lest he be angry and ye perish from the way when his wrath is kindled but a little. Blessed are all they that put their trust in him. Is it not shocking how we see in the Antichrist everything so twisted and perverted, and him claiming everything? In this case, literally having kings of the earth kiss him. Of course, this speaks of obedience in Psalm 2, but I'm saying literally obedience with a kiss is what he claims. And so this is the Antichrist supplanting Christ. The Pope is the Antichrist. And make no mistake about it, the woman and the beast are one in that this represents the papal ecclesiastical power and the papal civil power, but mostly exercised and projected through civil rulers. And even now, when possible. Certainly the last century provides many examples of this. I want to read to you from Roman Catholicism by Bible teacher Dr. Lorraine Botner. Lorraine sounds like a woman's name. It's a man. Unfortunately, he doesn't use the King James in this, but he has so much, I just want to warn about that. He has so much good documentation. Now, that book is copyright 1962. Just let me read you something here, talking about the woman that rides the beast. Many examples like this in the book. Modern examples of the woman riding the beast. Spain today. The Protestant population of Spain today, this is copyright 1962. Now, this is Spain under Franco, a Roman Catholic leader. The Roman Catholic Church always makes concordats with those people, with Roman Catholic leaders, or non-Catholic if they can. But listen to this. The Protestant population of Spain today is estimated at only 20,000, about half of whom are foreigners, with a constituency of about 10,000 others who may be termed sympathizers out of a total population of approximately 28 million. There are about 230 organized Protestant groups with only 70 or 80 pastors in the entire nation. Now remember, this is where the Spanish Inquisition obviously began and operated out of. That means that Spanish Protestants number only about 0.07% of, only about 0.07 of 1% of the population. The government is clerical fascist. Only one political party exists, that of dictator Franco. In present-day Spain, Protestants are not permitted to establish a Protestant church without license, be elected to any public office, national, provincial, or municipal, obtain employment as teachers in the public schools, obtain employment as nurses, establish a Protestant school for their children, establish a theological seminary to train their ministers, publish or distribute Protestant literature without a license, be married in a Protestant wedding service, only civil marriage is legal for Protestants, have a Protestant funeral service in many towns, bury their dead in the public cemeteries. All but a few of the Protestant churches that were in existence when Franco came to power in 1936 are now closed. New churches cannot be established without government permission, which under Franco's concordat with the Vatican is almost impossible to obtain because of the terms of the concordat. The Vatican won't allow it. I'm skipping ahead, talking about Spain yet. The public professions such as medicine, law, teaching, banking, and nursing are for the most part closed to Protestants. Often it is difficult to obtain any kind of employment unless they pay some allegiance to the Roman Church. Remember us talking about the mark of the beast? Trusted men and women who have been employed by a firm for years have been dismissed when it has been found out they have joined a Protestant church. The unemployed and destitute find it difficult in some cases to get public relief. Protestants in the army are not allowed to obtain officer rank. Sometimes even non-Christians receive better treatment. A Muslim has been promoted to lieutenant general. Young men obliged to do military service are expected to kneel before the image of the Virgin Mary during special mass. To disobey is a military offense, which may mean up to 2 years imprisonment. The controlled press tells the people that Protestants are not only heretics, but subversive leftists, communists, and Masons, and Protestants are not allowed to purchase space in the newspaper to reply to attacks made upon them. And then it goes on, the spirit of the Inquisition still lives in Spain. And goes on somewhat further. Back of these restrictions are the so-called Charter of the Spanish People of 1945 and the Concordat between Franco and the Pope. The key clause of the Charter reads, "The profession and practice of the Catholic religion, which is that of the state, shall enjoy official protection. No one shall be disturbed because of his religious beliefs or the private practice of his worship. No other outward ceremony or demonstrations than those of the Catholic religion shall be permitted." A little double talk. You see that with many of the communist constitutions as well. So official church is the Roman Catholic, and everyone's supposed to be part of it. Articles 1 and 19, although I'll just read part of this, just a little bit, respectively of the Concordat read, "The Catholic Apostolic Roman religion will continue to be the sole religion of the Spanish nation and will enjoy the rights and prerogatives which are due to it in conformity with the divine law and the canon law." And so there's a little example of the woman riding the beast today. And she still does ride the beast in various ways. Of course, now Franco is out. It's a little different there. Verse 4. "And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication." First, the woman is described as being arrayed in purple and scarlet color. Need I say more? These royal colors are those in which the Pope and his cardinals dress on various occasions. Purple and scarlet. I've seen a sea of it in some of the pictures. decked with gold and precious stones and pearls. Of course, the papacy and the papal church is fabulously wealthy, with investments all around the world, with cash flowing in from those investments and cash flowing in from the faithful. The Vatican owns a vast amount of real estate on which are situated lavish churches and schools. I've seen the churches, well, I haven't seen that many, but I've seen several, and they're all decked out with gold and all sorts of precious metals and the most expensive of woods and so on and so forth for the doors and other things. The Vatican itself, very lavish, it's said to have 11,000 halls and chambers. The Pope's little place, you know. Didn't Jesus say that he had nowhere to lay his head? Well, the Pope sure does. Can pick from 11,000 halls and chambers. And the papacy owns a great deal of priceless artwork, paintings and statuary, some of it obscene. But the papacy and the papal church are fabulously wealthy. And they're also decked, literally decked then, with gold and precious stones and pearls. For instance, the Pope's tiara. It's solid silver, that triple crown, solid silver with a solid gold cross on top and then studded with all sorts of precious, valuable jewels. The statues of Mary, some of them. They dress the statues and pictures with clothing that's just studded with valuable, valuable stones, jewels. They have these thrones here and there that are filled with jewels and gold and, as I said, the churches. Having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. One immediately thinks of the cup used in the abominable, filthy mass. Certainly the picture of a priest, a bishop, a cardinal, or the pope holding up that cup seems to visually comprehend the abominations and the filthiness of Romish harlotry. Of course, the Mass is a gross abomination. It is a filthy ritual which mocks and blasphemes the Lord Jesus Christ and the redemption he wrought out for the true church. The Mass is at the heart of Romanism. Of course, as we see abominations and filthiness of her fornication, we think of that first, the spiritual aspect of it. But then, you know, we talked earlier about the history of moral depravity associated with the papacy throughout history and, of course, the whole Roman Catholic priesthood. So the picture is of a spiritual religious whore who has made the inhabitants of the world drunk with her fornications and her abominations. And so in a general sense, we think of both the carnal and spiritual abominations and filthiness, which is woven throughout the historic fabric of popery. The Antichrist is a beast that's filthy in flesh and spirit. We've already talked about those who are just drunk, spiritually drunk, drunken from this woman. They've drank deeply of the lies, the deceptions, the filth, the superstition, the blasphemy of popery. Carnal and spiritual abominations and filthiness. I thought of 2 Corinthians 7, verse 1. Having therefore these promises, dearly beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. Now, I brought that up because I just want to point out that prior to that, you had that passage that commands God's people not to commit spiritual fornication with false religions. You know the whole thing in 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Doesn't it start with 14, I think? And it ends with this. Wherefore, come out from among them, and be ye separate, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and will be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord. And it goes on to say, having therefore these promises, dearly beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God, and spirit. So those who are involved in, well, fornication, that's the filthiness of the flesh. But there is a spiritual fornication that we need to cleanse ourselves of. That is, to put it simply, we could just say ecumenism. Verse 5, and upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. The great whore has a name written upon her forehead. It's right on her forehead. To the true discerning Christian, the woman described in this chapter 17 of the Revelation, that is the papal church, is just so obviously what the name on her forehead announces her to be. It's just so obvious. It's that obvious, as if this whore has it right across the forehead, as she did in John's vision. Mystery Babylon the Great, speaking of the Antichrist and his church. Paul wrote, because this echoes of something Paul wrote, 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 7, for the mystery of iniquity doth already work, only he who now letteth will let until he be taken out of the way. Now, we've already covered this in message number 5. We thoroughly covered that phrase, mystery of iniquity, and I'm not going to go back to it now and start over. I wouldn't do it justice in the space of time I have. Suffice it to say, here in John's vision, we again see the Antichrist and his religion described by the word mystery. Now, the futurists say, yes, this is the Roman Catholic Church. This is the papal system set forth here in chapter 17. But no, the papacy is not the Antichrist. Again, this seems inconsistent. In light of the fact that Paul describes Antichrist, and all futurists say, yes, that's Antichrist Paul's talking about in his epistle to the Thessalonians, he describes Antichrist with that phrase, mystery of iniquity, and now John, speaking of popery, says this is mystery, Babylon the Great, again. Mystery Babylon the Great. Now, others have done a painstaking work, a study of the ancient religious practices of Babylon, and then compared them to the Roman Catholic religious rituals and practices, the similarities. I'm not going to go into all of that. I will just mention that Babylon was a wealthy, luxurious, wicked nation, a state, church, religious system, and Babylon means confusion. Similarities to the papal religion are obvious right there. Now, the papal church and the papal empire have exceeded, far exceeded in every way, in wickedness, in bloodshed, in wealth, in power, in longevity, what Nebuchadnezzar called Great Babylon. Well, the papal church is truly Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots. The Pope and his people call their church Mother Church, but the scriptures call her the mother of harlots. The true church of Christ is put figuratively as his faithful bride in the scriptures. Apostate churches, the mother of harlots. Apostate churches claiming to be the church of Christ are harlots, because they're not faithful to Christ Jesus and his word. They say they are the bride of Christ, but they're not faithful. So they're harlots. They're not the true bride. Now, the woman in this vision of John's is called the mother of harlots. That's exactly what the papal system and church is. She's not only at the head of all apostate churches. I say she stands at the head of all apostate churches, predating and exceeding them greatly in every way. She is also the fountain of many of the errors which have produced apostate Protestant churches. The social gospel came from Rome. Universal atonement came from Rome. Conditional security, as it's sometimes called, came from Rome. And we could go on and give many more such examples. And there are many errors which are modifications of popery, such as the Lutherans' consubstantiation. We could also add that the Orthodox Church, Russian, Greek, and so forth, is, again, right out of Rome, in fact, one of her daughters. It's a split off from Rome, so to speak. Now, the mother of harlots and the abominations of the earth. The Pope and his church lay claim to being the only true church of Jesus Christ. Yet, look back over the history of just the popes themselves. The mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. The mother of abominations of the earth. The history of the popes themselves. What do you see in the history of the papacy? Mass murder, torture, fornication, homosexuality, incest, forgery, rape, sophistry, simony, lying, cheating, stealing, blasphemy, idolatry. Simony is selling spiritual things, which is what the Roman Catholic Church does in different ways. So she is the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. And then verse 6, the last verse we'll look at today. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. Now, to those with a knowledge of the history of the papacy, this verse needs little comment. I believe most of you sitting here, all of you sitting here, have a pretty good view of the history of the papacy with regard to the cruelty. We've talked about it many times and we've studied it. As we think about the merciless cruelty and barbarism with which the Pope, in fact, Pope after Pope, sought to exterminate the true church, men, women, and children, root and branch, one thing must not be glossed over. Roman Catholics today will say it was the civil rulers who committed those horrible crimes. Well, we've refuted that. It's easy to do. But just in this chapter, look here. It's the woman who rides the beast who's drunk with the blood of the saints and the martyrs of Jesus. It's the Pope and his priests who could not get enough of that blood. The Pope and his priests who control the civil powers, that woman is drunk with the blood of the saints and martyrs of Jesus. The Pope and his priests just couldn't get enough of that blood. They were intoxicated by that suffering and blood of our brethren, men, women, children. It's demonic. The civil rulers, though guilty enough in their own right, were fulfilling the Pope's pleasure and commands. If the Pope had commanded them to show tolerance toward true Christians, they would have done that also. The Pope holds the keys to heaven. They'll do what the Pope tells them to do. They would have done what the Pope told them to do. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. Admiration is used in a different way there, a different sense. When John saw the great whore drunken with the blood of the Lord's true church, he was filled with wonder. And the sense of admiration, that is, he just stared with wonder at the woman. That's what that means. He just stared. He was transfixed by this. Although he had already seen, now remember, he had already seen much persecution against the blood-bought followers of Jesus. He's in exile right now, and he's seen much bloodshed. Many, many Christians persecuted and even put to death by two Roman emperors. He had seen that, but nothing came anywhere close to what he saw in this vision of this woman drunken with the blood of saints and the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Not just bloody, though bloody she was and is, but just drunk with it. Not being able to get enough of it. And to this day, no religious or civil persecutor has come close to shedding the amount of Christian blood which the popes shed and shed with zeal and literally celebrated with glee, even commissioning paintings showing the murder of Christians, even striking medals for the same purpose, such as after the slaughter of the Huguenots, and even sending presents to the murderers, such as the Pope sent to the King of Spain for his slaughter of many Protestants in the Netherlands, and even literally holding wild celebrations in Rome when the word came that thousands and thousands of Christians had been brutally done to death. Waldenses, Huguenots, Albigenses, pretty much wiped out, and on and on and on. We've documented and we've studied that blood-soaked history of the papacy, of the popes of Antichrist, the man of sin, the son of perdition. I would recommend, again, that you read that part of your homeschooling curriculum for the older children is The History of Protestantism by J.A. Wiley. I would recommend that you do that, very strongly recommend you do that. No Christian child should graduate into the world without reading The History of Protestantism by J.A. Wiley. I want to close this segment of our series on Antichrist in view of this last verse, the woman drunken with the blood of the saints, with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus, by reading an excerpt from a lecture given by H. Groton Guinness, a preacher and evangelist who was active in the Ulster Revival of 1859. There's so much we could talk about in this regard. I thought, well, maybe I'll just read some of this, what this brother has written. He has pages of it. I'm not sure how much to read. He says, I'll just jump into the middle of it. Let us look into the chamber of horrors in the Spanish Inquisition. The place of torture, says a Spanish historian, the place of torture in the Spanish Inquisition is generally an underground and very dark room to which one enters through the several doors. There is a tribunal erected in it in which the inquisitor, inspector, and secretary sit. When the candles are lighted and the person to be tortured brought in, the executioner who is waiting for him makes an astonishing and dreadful appearance. He is covered all over with a black linen garment down to his feet and tied close to his body. His head and face are all concealed with a long black cowl, only two little holes being left in it for him to see through. All of this is intended to strike the miserable wretch with greater terror in mind and body when he sees himself going to be tortured by the hands of one who looks like the very devil. And he goes on and describes in detail some of the tortures of the Spanish Inquisition, and you've read them. We handed out a handout a while back. He talks about how they're brought in and men and women, young boys, young girls, stripped absolutely naked, and then clothed with only a little short pair of linen drawers so that the torturer can have access to their body. And he goes on and talks about that. But let me jump further ahead. He gives some graphic descriptions. Let me jump further ahead. Hear me, though in truth I scarcely know how to speak upon this subject. I am almost dumb with horror when I think of it. I have visited the places in Spain and France and Italy, most deeply stained and dyed with martyr blood. I have visited the valleys of Piedmont. I have stood in the shadow of the great cathedrals of Seville, on the spot where they burned the martyrs or tore them limb from limb. I have stood breast deep in the ashes of the martyrs of Madrid. I have read the story of Rome's deeds. I have waded through many volumes of history and martyrology. I have visited, either in travel or in thought, scenes too numerous for me to name, where the saints of God have been slaughtered by papal Rome, that great butcher of bodies and of souls. I cannot tell you what I have seen, what I have read, what I have thought. I cannot tell you what I feel. Oh, it is a bloody tale. I have stood in that valley of Lucrina, where dwelt the faithful Waldenses, those ancient Protestants who held to the pure gospel all through the dark ages, that lovely valley with its pine-clad slopes, which Rome converted into a slaughterhouse. Oh, horrible massacres of gentle, unoffending, noble-minded men. Oh, horrible massacres of tender women and helpless children. Yes, ye hated them, ye hunted them, ye stuck them on spits, ye impaled them, ye hanged them, ye roasted them, ye flayed them, ye cut them in pieces, ye violated them, ye violated the women, ye violated the children, ye forced flints into them and stakes and stuffed them with gunpowder and blew them up and tore them asunder limb from limb and tossed them over precipices and dashed them against the rocks. Ye cut them up alive, Ye dismembered them. Ye racked, mutilated, burned, tortured, mangled, massacred holy men, sainted women, mothers, daughters, tender children, harmless babes, hundreds, thousands, thousands upon thousands. Ye sacrificed them in heaps, turning all Spain, Italy, France, Europe, Christian Europe into a slaughterhouse, a charnel house, an Akeldama. Oh, horrible, too horrible to think of. The sight dims, the heart sickens, the soul is stunned in the presence of the awful spectacle. O harlot, gilded harlot, with brazen brow and brazen heart, red are thy garments, red thine hands, thy name is written in this book, God has written it, the world has read it. Thou art a murderess, O Rome, thou art the murderous Babylon the Great, drunken, foully drunken, yea, drunken with the sacred blood which thou hast shed in streams and torrents. The blood of saints, the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Were there naught else by which to recognize thee, O persecuting Church of Rome? This dreadful mark would identify thee. This is thy brand. By this we know thee. Thou art that foretold Babylon. We know thee. And it goes on. As we close this segment and we close with that verse, I thought perhaps he summed it up better than I might have, were I to just speak extemporaneously. And I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. And now how many Protestants today, evangelicals, join hands with this abominable, filthy, bloody, whore, the murderer of their brethren. Shame on them. Shame on them when they've been told. What are they? They're spiritual fornicators. That's what they are. And with who? With a great whore, drunken with the blood of their own brethren. May God help us to hate the papacy. May God help us to love the Roman Catholic people that are in bondage under that vicious, vile, bloody, brutal system.